Bootstrapping, a Cobra Kai fanfic by Minocchio, read by GorillasGal86. Rating, explicit. Fandoms, Cobra Kai and Karate Kid. Relationship, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence. Summary, in which the early 20s competing dumpster fires of Gotta Hustle Daniel and Gotta Take My Stepdad's Money and Burn It Johnny meet again. Chapter 26. When his alarm goes off in the morning, Daniel slaps it quiet and forces himself to get up and shuffle into the other room. He stands with his forehead against the wall and his eyes closed as he makes the call into work. He is pretty confident that his voice sounds fucked up enough to convince the garage he's serious about being sick. Carl barely sounds annoyed at being cheated out of a day of Daniel's labor. He keeps his eyes closed as he re-enters his bedroom, which is the main reason why he trips over Johnny. He goes down with a loud curse, smacks his head on the corner of the bed, and bangs his knees on the floor. In the aftermath, he just sort of lies there, blinking in a faint shock at the baseboard on the opposite wall. It needs dusting.
Ow.
He eventually croaks. I tried warning you, man, says Johnny, looking at him upside down under his bent arm. He is still doing his plank. Daniel hates him.
Why?
He groans, sitting up gingerly. He refuses to feel stupid about being completely naked. He waves at Johnny.
Just why?
Johnny only gives him a confused look. Daniel rubs his kneecaps and glares at him. I was going to go back to sleep, but now I think I'm in too much pain. Want me to fuck the hangover out of you? He asks, eyes alight with sincerity.
No.
Daniel squints around the room, the horrific bright morning of it all. Maybe later. How long are you going to take up my floor doing that? Why, were you using this space for something?
Asshole.
In response, Daniel decides to climb onto his back, figuring he could at least ride him down to the floor. Nose first would be nice. See how he likes it. Except. Daniel sighs, his whole body slumping in disappointment.
Seriously?
Because Johnny isn't dropping the plank. His neck is turning a deep red from the effort of maintaining the position. But he sounds nothing but smug when he laughs at the floor.
You just love losing, don't you?
Daniel crosses his legs and props his chin in his palm. You're gonna go down sometime, man. I can wait you out. He lasts another 30 seconds. Daniel counts aloud, and then he lowers himself with an obnoxious show of control while Daniel idly drags his fingers down his back, over the warm muscle and the light sheen of sweat. He is just thinking he should skedaddle when Johnny makes his move to dump him on the ground. Daniel lunges for the bed, hands fisting in the blanket for purchase, but Johnny gets a grip on his ankles and tugs him backwards. Undignified scuffling ensues. He sneezes twice because the floor under his bed is also in need of dusting. Somehow in the end, Daniel finds himself on his back, blinking up at a victorious Johnny. Like I said, says Johnny, pink-faced over him. You just love losing. Daniel refuses to fidget. Who lost? He wants to know. He glances at that grinning mouth, and his stomach twists a little in reflexive annoyance. Maybe I'm playing the long game. Johnny lowers himself, so he is pressing him into the floor with his weight and big dick and Daniel clears his throat, not quite liking how Johnny is watching him. This is... that fuck still on the table? His hands creep around to grab his ass so he can grind up, trying to release a little pressure. It doesn't work. Johnny makes a show of looking around. I think we're on the floor. Come on, he says, when Johnny still doesn't move. What? Do you want me to beg or something? Johnny gives him a wide-eyed look, almost half-panicked. Fuck, don't do that. You only make me pay for it later. This surprises a laugh out of Daniel. It punches its way out of his belly before he can think twice. Johnny looks equally surprised, though this quickly turns into a pleased, that is, smug, smile. Daniel turns his head a little to look away. His cheeks feel warm, and he doesn't know what to do about it. Okay, well, either get on with it or get off me. You're kind of heavy, he says. It's all muscle, baby. Daniel makes a face at the ceiling. Ugh, never mind. Just get off me. I think I'm going to be sick. No, really. I mean it. Anyway, after they have sex, they split the rest of his cereal out in the other room. Johnny wanders the perimeter just in his boxers, holding the bowl up to his face to slurp and crunch like a horse at the trough, while Daniel tries not to faceplant into his own bowl over the table. Always meant to ask, why don't you have a TV? Asks Johnny, standing in the middle of the room and turning in place like one might suddenly materialize. I've never seen an apartment without a TV before. What use do I have for a TV? He asks, waving a spoon. I work all the time, and I spend the weekends with my ma or Mr. Miyagi. Johnny cocks his head. Your sensei? My friend, he corrects. He narrows his eyes at him. Don't you dare buy a television. If I come in here some afternoon and you've cluttered the place up with a TV... Cluttered the place up? Repeats Johnny in disbelief. Because having some options for entertainment would be so awful, right? Is this the fish thing again? Demands Daniel, dropping his spoon into his bowl with a clatter. Like you're extending the metaphor, you think my tank lacks enrichment or whatever, so you're going to start filling it up with junk I don't need. LaRusso, he says, amused. I never actually offered to buy you a television. He adjusts his shoulders, a little huffy and refusing to be embarrassed. Yeah, well, see that you don't. He picks the spoon back up. Johnny shakes his head. After a moment, he tips his bowl back and drinks the remainder of his milk. Then he drops the bowl into the sink like the insufferably rude house guest he is and announces, I gotta go. But I'm not working. Daniel thinks, eyebrows pinching. He glances around. Got some stuff to do. Right. So much for the sex sick day. He feels his hangover waiting on the edges, ready to pounce the moment all distractions are gone. Johnny takes two steps to the bedroom and then pauses and wheels back around, expression crestfallen. What? What is it? Asks Daniel, dread mounting. If he tries to say something. I didn't bring a change of clothes with me, says Johnny, and when Daniel starts to laugh, he adds, do you have any athletic shorts or anything? Or can I borrow a shirt at least? Oh, wow. Because Daniel hiccups mid-laugh and then sort of chokes on the air. Glad you find this so funny, I guess. If you didn't want me to laugh, man, you shouldn't have picked that costume, he says, but he gets up to find him something to wear. After Johnny's called a taxi and left, Daniel rinses out the bowls. He turns in place to survey the empty apartment. Over in her tank, Roxanne showily fans around her new plant with something like smugness. And now Daniel is assigning emotions to a fish. Time to go back to bed. Chapter 27. He sleeps another 4 hours and gets nothing but groggy for it. He boils some water and stirs up a cup of Folgers and chokes it down. Every time he thinks it can't be as bad as he remembers, and every time it's somehow worse. He should just relent on his budget and buy a coffee maker. Surely he can find one used somewhere. Or he could just steal Johnny's. He's pretty sure he doesn't even use his, just bought it because it was something someone told him an apartment was supposed to have, like a television. Of course, the problem isn't actually the coffee maker. He could do drip, and that's cheap enough, but the beans. He knows from buying tea for Mr. Miyagi that the real expense is the added monthly cost of the habit. But surely even cheap beans are better than Folgers. Also, he's giving up smoking, so that barely born habit could easily be swapped out. Anyway, he has a whole 5 hours before he needs to be at the bar, so he slaps together a sandwich and drives down to the beach. It's not warm enough to try swimming, but he wanders along the beach for a couple miles, just out of reach of the dragging tide. And he thinks about a wide open, glorious nothing. Johnny comes into the bar close to 11, and he's sober for once. That makes it almost weirder. Dark moods brought on by drinking can be shrugged off. Daniel doesn't know what to do with a Johnny who is just feeling down, like a regular person with a whole regular life outside of drinking and sex. It makes him instinctively uneasy to think about. Johnny blinks down at the open beer waiting for him at the end of the bar, but before he can say anything about it, Daniel hastily asks, "You take care of your thing today?" Johnny sits on the stool and reaches for the bottle. He agitates the label edges with his thumbnail and glances up at Daniel, looking a little unsure. "Yeah?" He nods back and doesn't really know what to say. So he knocks his knuckles on the bar. What is that? Like he's thanking someone for a tip? Come the fuck on, man. And goes to handle the pileup of customers a few feet away. The next 3 hours pass quickly, and he doesn't have a chance to do much more than glance at Johnny and occasionally give him another beer. The guy's not exactly knocking them back, and that freaks Daniel out almost more than the slumped shoulders and glum expression. He doesn't even have time to drag him into the storeroom for a blowjob like before. And anyway, Johnny doesn't look like he's in the mood. And that really freaks Daniel out. Maybe if Daniel offered to fuck him, like the change-up might knock something loose in that sad, constipated brain. Damn. Is that all Daniel has to offer? More sex? But, hang on, what's wrong with that? It's not like this is a real, serious relationship. It's based on sex. Always has been. This is how they communicate. Through sex and occasionally property destruction and meals and weird fish metaphors and shit. That's all Johnny, isn't it? Okay. So, sex is all Daniel has to offer. But that's nothing to be ashamed of, he's been upfront about it. And Johnny's accepted it so far, so fuck him if he thinks Daniel owes him something more than to be his weird sex fish. "That your tip?" he asks a guy, some guy with a thick neck and mean eyes. "Really? A couple of dimes? What do you think this is, 1970? Can't even make a phone call with that." The guy is too taken aback to get angry. "I don't have any change, just a 10. "I can break a 10. He says easily, like he's doing him a favor. It works. Probably more from the confusion on the part of the guy than anything else. So maybe his eyes aren't mean. They're just beady. Not his fault. Daniel breaks a 10 and takes the buck and shoos the unfortunate meathead away with a flick of his hand. "So anyway, what's the big deal? Since when does Daniel care if his cock on loan is sad?" And wow, he is a tool. When did he become such a fucking tool? Just because Johnny's a clueless jackass doesn't mean he has to be. What would Father Hall say here if Father Hall could hear this argument and wasn't probably enormously homophobic? He'd say everyone possesses a god, given dignity. Even Johnny Lawrence. Daniel lifts a rack of glasses into place below the bar and grimaces down at where Johnny is sitting with his cheek smashed on his fist, idly watching the television like it's a football game he's being forced to sit through. Johnny hates football, and is it weird that he knows that? No. Daniel's pretty sure he remembers that particular rant or two from a couple years back. It's no big deal. He's got a long memory, right? What's with the face? Asks Michelle, passing him with a tray holding four margaritas. You forgot salt on those, he says, and over her subsequent curse, he asks, do you know what's up with Johnny? I mean, he talks to you sometimes, right? Not a psych major, she says crisply and walks away to deliver her subpar margaritas. He glares after her. So right, what's it to Daniel if he lets Johnny have some of the weird stuff he wants? Boyfriend stuff. It's still not leading him on, if he draws a line and keeps to it. No kissing, no hand-holding, nothing like that. But the rest, well, it's just common decency. Daniel may be tired and broke and a little depressed, but he doesn't have to behave like an animal. Daniel sets a new beer in front of Johnny, maybe a little harder than necessary. And Johnny jerks a little back from the bar in surprise. Want to stay at my place tonight? He demands, bracing his hands on his hips. Johnny's brow pinches. Well, I wasn't hanging around here for the fun of it. And this is what he gets when he tries to be nice? The presumption. I mean, this bar kind of sucks, no offense. He continues, seemingly oblivious to Daniel's scowl. He lifts the beer and takes a pull. He gestures with the bottle at Daniel. Worst one on the strip, and I hear it's got a really mean bartender. But he smiles at Daniel, like it's an inside joke. So he's recovered enough from his funk to mess with Daniel. Whatever it was clearly not that big a deal. Daniel is relieved. He shows this relief by snapping his fingers and demanding Johnny pay for the beer. Chapter 28. Checking balance? Not enough. Cash on hand? Not enough. Rent due? Soon. A couple of weeks pass. Draw a line and keep to it, he'd said. God, what a fucking idiot. Who put that guy in charge? The premiere of Rocky V is imminent, and somehow Johnny not only lures Daniel to his place on a Sunday night, but he convinces him to rewatch the previous four movies as a way of preparing. Like they need to see Rocky put himself through his paces four times to fully get the nuance of whatever is about to hit the silver screen. Johnny shakes his head as he slides the fourth tape into the player. You're such a shitty liar, man. I know you love this stuff. I bet you have a thing for the Italian stallion. I do not, says Daniel with great care, because he wants this to be very clear. Have a thing for Stallone. However, I do appreciate that Rocky's life sucks all the goddamn time, even after he wins. That's realism for you. Johnny collapses back on the couch, sprawling and taking up a lot of space. And it's late. And it'd be weird to continue to sit on the far side of this hideous, massive sectional, like they're leaving space for Jesus. Jesus is fine where he is. It feels like he's floating on an island way over here. And anyway, Daniel's tired, so he's just going to lie down, okay? Johnny doesn't skip a beat. His hands land in his hair. Daniel narrows his eyes at the feature presentation screen, tensing a little, because this was not an invitation. But before he can say anything, the hand presses and jostles his head. Hey, don't fall asleep. Apollo dies in this one. Show some respect. Daniel wonders, if he turned his head and bit down, could his teeth pierce the denim beneath his cheek? I'm not asleep, you lunatic,
respect,
he mutters. So they watch the evil blonde Soviet do his thing, and they watch Rocky cradle Apollo as he dies, and they watch the training montage, which seems perhaps just a little heavy-handed, now that the Cold War is over and all. I used to wonder about your training, says Johnny, as Rocky muscles his way through snow and performs some very patriotic wood chopping. Daniel makes a questioning noise. He is totally awake. Johnny's hand is stroking his head now, and actually, it seems like a lot of effort to get him to stop. Senior year. Afterwards, I wondered if you did the Rocky thing. You know, the whole working class shit. Punching frozen meat and all that. I'm flattered, Johnny, but I've never had muscles like Sylvester Stallone. He falls asleep before the big match, which is fine. He's not really in the mood to watch Rocky get the worst beating of his life, even knowing it all ends, as they say, well. Or it's a Wednesday, and it had been a particularly busy day at the garage, and Daniel is pretty sure his back is never going to recover, not even if he wins the lottery and spends the rest of his life lying beachside somewhere with Mr. Miyagi, sipping highballs. Okay, fine. He sighs to Johnny as he tugs him into the storeroom. It's a slow night. Michelle, chill out. But I'm telling you, you're going to have to do all the work. What else is new? Says Johnny. And before Daniel can mutter a response to this grievous insult to his athleticism in bed, he makes him sit backwards on the little folding chair, usually kept in the corner for when they're doing inventory. A second later, Johnny's hands land on his shoulders, and his thumbs dig in hard along the knots and... Oh, fuck. Oh, God. Johnny pauses. Okay, you really can't be that loud. People are going to get the wrong idea about what we're doing in here. You fucked a girl over that freezer, says Daniel, turning his head slightly to look back at him. He's so stiff, his neck won't go the whole way. Yeah, and she was quiet. He replies unashamed, but he starts massaging and, oh, fuck. Oh, God. Johnny clears his throat, but he doesn't stop again, which is the important thing. You want to go to church Sunday? He asks him one Friday night. He's getting up early to go stay with Mr. Miyagi the next morning, and he doesn't know why or how, but the question just kind of slips out. In the aftermath, Daniel is staring accusingly up at the ceiling at his bedroom. Even for a mysterious guy like God, that was a bit much. Johnny sounds almost paralyzed with embarrassment. Is that a joke? Of course it is, Daniel says, not looking away from the ceiling. Get real, heathen like you. You'd probably start on fire the moment you stepped on consecrated grounds. He likes the weight of his arm around him. First serious crush Daniel ever had, he was like 11 or something, an awkward age, because it was old enough to no longer be overlooked or laughed off by his adults or peers, and too young to properly do anything about. Not that he let it stop him from trying. In his head, he remembered it all seemed very clear-cut. He liked Emma Kazlikaus, and he seemed to make her laugh, which at the time was like the best thing under the sun, so clearly they should date, or hang out, or whatever. There was no pausing between feeling and action. Anyway, the subsequent teasing was pretty merciless. As he got older, he was able to ride the brakes a little more, but not much. Every time was more or less the same. The swift fall, the hard landing. But Daniel used to have rubber bones. He bounced back. Soon enough, every time, his heart would start tugging him along to someone new. But he refuses. He absolutely refuses to follow that thing this time. When it comes to men, it simply doesn't know what it is doing. Chapter 29. Checking balance, $310. Cash on hand, $50. Rent due soon. In the dream, he is in their old bonsai shop, pruning a pine tree. In the maddening tendency of all his dreams, he isn't making any progress. When he tries concentrating on a cut he wants to make, the shears won't close, or they slip from his grasp. He keeps trying, though. But the longer he works at it, the harder it becomes, and the more desperate he feels. Large hands grab him by the hips and press him down over the table, scattering tools. And his voice is above and behind him. And now Daniel's desperate in an entirely different way. This never happened in real life. The man hadn't been interested in Daniel like that, or hadn't realized Daniel was interested. And thank God, because Daniel would have bent over for him. He probably would have dumped the trees on the ground to make the space. Anything to have all that focus and attention. Those dark eyes fill with approval. He fights the dream, but it's too late. He's already being taken apart. A please on his lips and a sob in his throat. Daniel starts awake in the darkness of his bedroom. He is hard, and there is a hand on his hip. His gorge rises. He rips himself off the bed, lunging for the bathroom.
What?
Starts Johnny, groggy and confused behind him. Daniel slams the door shut and falls to his knees before the toilet, distant, bruising pain. He hovers there for a long moment, shivering. But he doesn't throw up. But he does get a thorough study of the bend in the bowl where he failed to scrub properly last time he cleaned. After a couple of minutes, he shakily stands back up. He splashes some cold water on his face. He avoids looking at the mirror. Then he mindlessly paces the small room, holding his elbows and trying to regain control of his breathing. He focuses on the stick peel of his bare feet over the tile. 2, 3 steps, pivot. 2 more steps, pivot. Creak in the floorboards outside. Johnny's voice, quiet.
You all right? Is it food poisoning?
What? Daniel blinks from the floor to the door. He's appalled to notice his eyes are a little wet. He rubs his elbows, keeps pacing. No. He pauses.
No, it's not food poisoning, or no, you're not all right.
Daniel breathes out. He isn't in control, he isn't thinking when he reaches for the knob. He pulls the door open, and Johnny flinches a little at the sudden spill of light. His hair is a disaster, his face lined with pillow creases. He jerks in surprise when Daniel rises up and kisses him hard, desperate again. Johnny's mouth tastes stale from sleep. It's such an imperfect detail, so gorgeously real. It makes him press closer, rub his cheek against the rasp of his stubble. This isn't anything he'd ever dream about. He doesn't have the imagination for it. Johnny seems too shocked to move for a long moment. Even his lips are slow to respond, clumsy. Daniel breaks off and says low against his jaw, not breaking connection with his skin.
I'm not all right.
His arms finally come up around him,
and Daniel can feel the hard pounding of the man's heartbeat, a match to his own. "Okay," says Johnny, voice sounding. "Well, I'm here." Daniel kisses him again, and it's terrifying how right it feels. "I know, Johnny." He pushes him backwards towards the bed, not letting up. He can't let up because if he does, he'll start thinking, and he doesn't like his thoughts, doesn't want them anymore. But maybe Johnny can block them for him. Maybe he's big enough. "I know." And Johnny acts like he understands, because he pulls them back to the bed and rolls them so he's covering Daniel. And he doesn't stop kissing him, not for a second. In the darkness and quiet, it almost seems like he's the one falling apart. Daniel is up again at dawn before Johnny is stirring. He slides out from beneath his arm, sits and swings his legs out from the bed, and blinks at the floor, waiting for his thoughts to fall into some semblance of waking order. He feels stretched and beaten, and his mouth is sore. He realizes he is holding his fingers to his lips and drops his hand. He quickly dresses and leaves the apartment. He doesn't have time to think about this. It's a Tuesday, and there are still 4 days to get through. He buys a breakfast sandwich from a mini-mart, and then he goes to work. He hopes for a busy day, so of course it's the slowest they maybe ever had, like the California Air Resources Board finally got its way, and people have decided to stop driving their cars, maybe take the bus instead. "Hey, got a cigarette?" asks Sean, coming to stand over Daniel as he lies stretched out on a workbench. Daniel points at his jacket pocket over on the hook 10 feet away, not looking away from the garage's slowly revolving ceiling fan. "Go on ahead and take the whole pack," he says. "Didn't get the taste for it, huh?" "Guess not." "What's a man without any vices?" says Sean, almost like he's disapproving. The penny drops that night, but with inflation, it's more like $500. An unfamiliar man walks through the door of the bar in a $500 suit and shoes that shine like someone was actually paid to take a cloth to them, on their knees probably, and tipped if they were very lucky. Daniel's down at the far end of the bar, topping up the bottles on the speed rail. He keeps one eye on the strange man, who stands in the center of the room and takes his time studying the place. He has his hands in his suit pockets, a wide-legged stance, a blunt forehead, and a hard mouth. Daniel doesn't think this is the bar owner, Roy's uncle. One glance at Michelle shows she's as nonplussed as he. The man ambles up to the bar, and she puts down her paper back. "Can I help you?" He doesn't answer, only tilts his head and studies her closely, like he's trying to see if he remembers her from somewhere. Daniel stops messing with the speed rail, stops pretending he's not watching. "Hey there, sweetheart," he says, and he's got one of those voices instantly recognizable as industry executive, or a parody of one, because the parody is the closest Daniel's ever came to hearing one speak. "Give me an old-fashioned, will you? Rye, if you have it." He watches her like a hawk as she turns and makes the drink, but doesn't move to touch the glass when it arrives on a napkin at his elbow. "You know Johnny Lawrence?" he asks. Michelle's eyebrows lower. "Yeah," she says warily. "Sure, I know Johnny." "You're her, aren't you?" he says with an amused smile. "You must be." "I don't know what you're talking about." Daniel starts down the bar. "Come on, no need to play coy. It's all right, I'm his stepfather. Whose money do you think he's been dropping on you these past several weeks? I just wanted to take a look at the boy's slut, see what the fuss was all about. What would make him run up hundreds of dollars on my credit card in a joint like this one?
Michelle is tight-lipped by now. Points of red high on her cheeks. Not from embarrassment, but anger. Her eyes slide to Daniel, who squares off against the bar, and says to the man, who hasn't glanced once at him, "Keep looking in the wrong direction, pal. You're liable to get hit by a car." The man blinks. Maybe he's never been called pal before, or perhaps just not by someone like Daniel. And I think you owe her an apology. Johnny's stepdad doesn't apologize, but he does switch his sights to Daniel. It's hard not to realize, looking into his eyes, that he could probably crush Daniel's little life without much difficulty. It's harder to care. A glint of teeth appear as the man slowly starts to grin. Oh, so it's like that. And when Daniel shrugs, he laughs humorously. Better and better. Boy's mother's sick with cancer, and he's out playing faggot on the town. Guess even our Johnny can surprise you sometimes. He doesn't let his expression change, but after a second his eyes flicker to Michelle. She is glaring and her mouth is pressed tight, but she is not surprised. Is there a reason you came in here? He asks, and he is viciously pleased his voice comes out normal. He flicks his hand at him. I mean, even guys like you don't go around insulting people for no reason, surely. What do you want? The man's smile drops. Down to business. I can appreciate that. So long as you do it quickly and leave. Watch it, kid. He reaches inside his suit jacket and pulls out a checkbook. A pen also materializes. Keep a civil tongue, and this can be your lucky day. So, how much will it take for you to fuck off?
Are you serious?
He says, incredulous. It's the fucking 90s, he wants to add, but he can't get the words out past his shock. I like to take care of my investments. Unfortunately, that includes my poor wife's useless brat. He looks at him expectantly, unblinking. Now, how much? Say, 2,000? Make it 5, says Daniel, and the man smirks like he's funny. I'll give you 3.
No, best make it 5,
he says again, and now he says it easy. His heart is beating very fast. He smiles pleasantly. You have no idea how good I am at sucking cock. Out of the corner of his right eye, he sees Michelle turn away. The man's face creases in faint disgust, and he shakes his head, but not like he's saying no. Glad to see someone of your generation know what he's worth, I guess, he says dryly. His pin click is loud in the empty bar. Daniel braces his hands against the counter and watches keenly as the check is written out. The sound of the paper tearing is like music to his ears. He accepts the check and holds it between his middle and index finger in the air, eyes lingering with pleasure over the zeros on the far right line. Money is such a funny thing. He kills himself every day to make so little of it. And then every once in a while some asshole comes along and reminds him that it's entirely bullshit next to his pride, not really worth anything at all. The man steps back and slides the checkbook away. His hand is still in his jacket when Daniel crumples the check into a tiny ball, drops it into the old-fashioned, still sitting on the bar. He pauses. Daniel picks up the glass and gives it a swirl. He smiles his most charming smile and toasts him, knocks the drink back. The paper doesn't go down easy, but he doesn't let on. That was a stupid thing to do, says the man after a long moment. His eyes are narrow, smile hard. He is embarrassed and hiding it poorly. You ever drink a $5,000 old-fashioned? Says Daniel. He spins the glass idly on the bar. I'd say it was worth it for the bragging rights alone. If you cared about the brat at all,
You should have taken the check.
I think it's time you leave, says Michelle, speaking up again. He steps back, sneer firmly in place.
See if I don't buy this place and turn it into a parking lot,
is his parting shot.
And Daniel almost laughs.
If I beg, will you promise?
He wonders at his back.
Once he's gone, Michelle turns on him, eyes alight with glee.
Lizzie Bennett, eat your heart out.
Is mom sick? He asks her. Her smile fades as quickly as it had appeared. She says, awkward. He had his reasons for not telling you.
I'm sure. Daniel nods.
Yeah. He hasn't, after all, given Johnny any reason to believe he'd care. Why would he expect anything from Daniel? And he doesn't know which is worse. The idea Johnny doesn't think he could be trusted with it. Or the possibility he is right. If Daniel had found out a month ago, what would he have said? He honestly doesn't know. He wonders what he'll say to him when Johnny comes in. But then he realizes it's a Tuesday. And Johnny doesn't come in on Tuesdays, does he? Daniel has never even bothered to notice the pattern or ask about it. Tuesdays? He asks Michelle, after clearing his throat a little. She doesn't quite wince. I think she's got an appointment. He stays with her. He nods again. This only confirms for Daniel that none of it is real. It's been the relationship equivalent of that check he just knocked back with whiskey. But he thinks about the unreality of last night. The sounds Johnny had made and the connection and security Daniel had felt while lying under him. And he knows there is one difference between this and the check. He didn't regret throwing the check away. He spins the glass again. How bad is it? He asks, eyes down. Thinking about his dad, failed hurdle after failed hurdle of hope. I don't know. He doesn't really talk. I mean, he says she's going to be fine. But it's impossible to tell whether that's the truth or just Johnny being Johnny. Maybe they've both been using the other man as a distraction this whole time. Yeah. She watches him. Are you mad? He spins the glass again and snatches it up as it wobbles, sweeps the napkin into the trash, turns away, and doesn't answer. Chapter 30, Day Before Thanksgiving Break, 1990. He can't even tell his mom about the kiss, because that would involve admitting he's never actually kissed Daniel before. And out of context, that sounds like really bad news. Like Johnny's desperate or delusional or something. So when she asks why he seems like he's got something on his mind, he only tells her he's made serious progress. She nods with raised eyebrows that say, I bet. He glares at her. I'm serious. Oh, believe me, I got that part. Okay, so, when do I get to meet this charming boy? And her tone is as sarcastic as her eyebrows. But just wait until she actually meets Daniel. She's going to think he's hilarious. Question is, when? In retrospect, this is a question he should have seen coming, and his stomach twists in guilt. It's not like he hasn't told Daniel about her because he's embarrassed or ashamed. It's not like that. Let's hold off with the big guns for a little while longer, he says, shifting. It's kind of at a delicate stage. The big guns? Oh, I like that. Make sure to put that on my gravestone. Kidding, John. I'm kidding, she says, reaching a hand out to him when he moves to get up. He slumps back down in his chair and stares hard at the bedspread. Sorry, she says after a couple seconds, wincing.
It's my chemo buddies. They have the darkest sense of humor I've ever heard. Kind of contagious, apparently. Apparently, he says. Tell me how the job is going, she suggests, and he groans even though he's not really feeling it. But these moments sometimes require both of them to fake it. See if you can't make me miss my waitress days. Go on. It's the worst, he says. He doesn't show up at Daniel's apartment before a shift on Wednesday. Daniel had mentioned on Monday that it was going to be a busy night. Johnny figures he probably wouldn't be in any kind of mood to talk. Call it a hunch. A clue left over from how Johnny woke up alone on Tuesday morning. And that hadn't been great. But he is determined to play it cool, like he has been this whole time. If he just keeps playing it cool, he figures he can slide right into home plate without the other guy being any wiser. This has always been the plan. And maybe he has another reason to not show up on Wednesday afternoon. Which is that he is actually a gigantic coward. Years of idly thinking about what it would be like to kiss Daniel LaRusso, and it never occurred to Johnny it would destroy him from the inside out. Who's he kidding? If they're going to start kissing, they probably won't be any more playing it cool. Cool will get in a taxi and not look back. Cool will liquidate all its funds and buy a ticket to Merida. Cool hears the gringo expat life is pretty good down there. And sure, his mom and Michelle and Bobby, if Bobby knew about all this, all think Johnny's a hopeless idiot. But he really isn't. He hasn't tried kissing Daniel before now, has he? He'd left that one protection in place. And he always knew it wasn't Daniel he was protecting. When he comes into the bar, Daniel watches him for so long, Johnny begins to feel unnerved. It's basically what he feared. This isn't a hot and bothered, God, fuck, I need you so bad type look, what Daniel is giving him. It's more like a narrow-eyed assessment. Like Johnny is a math problem, Daniel is losing patience with. Daniel was never going to go down easy. Play it cool. He reminds himself. He takes his usual seat and does not ask where Daniel went Tuesday morning, like a pathetic, lovesick boy. He asks for a beer, like a very cool man. Daniel passes one over and leans against the counter in front of him, shoulders a little tense. Johnny takes a pull from his beer and pretends not to notice. But it's hard to keep up the charade with the guy standing right at him and all. There had been a moment on Monday night when Johnny was doing his best to kiss him through the mattress, where Daniel had lifted his right hand and flattened his palm over Johnny's heart and just kept it there. He clears his throat. Not so busy in here after all. It's early, says Daniel, and hey, You talk to your stepdad at all? Not if I can help it, says Johnny after a couple seconds, confused. He looks at Daniel and finally notices the alien expression of awkward guilt on his face. Why? He kind of came in here yesterday. He reaches to a tray of dripping glasses on his left and begins drying them. Busy work for his hands, Johnny thinks absently. Oh. And Daniel actually winces. Yeah. Johnny thinks about this. Huh. He takes another drink. No, look, listen. We had words, and I kind of maybe outed you to him. He clears his throat and wipes the glass in his hand, even though it's dry and has been for at least 10 seconds. Wasn't really thinking. Sorry. Johnny pictures what Sid will be like the next time they see each other and grimaces a little at the air. But only a little, because it's not like the man's ever pleasant anyway. So he has one more thing to throw in Johnny's face. Oh well. He sits up a little and shrugs. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Daniel narrows his eyes skeptically. Don't worry about it. Does he provide everything? All your money? Which makes him sound like some kind of freeloader. What the hell? Johnny's got a job, doesn't he? And he's so good at it, he shows up even on the days he's not technically being paid. Look, my mom already knows, and she's the one that matters, so yeah, don't worry about it. Daniel's going to break that glass if he wipes it any harder. Johnny looks at it meaningfully, and he finally seems to realize it's dry. He stacks it and reaches for the next. Your mom already knows, he says, his tone off. Yeah. He considers telling the story about the incident with the hot photographer and Laura dropping in to pick Johnny up for breakfast one Saturday 3 years ago, but that would involve reminding Daniel about the modeling, and then he might ask what happened with that, and the less said about the whole dramatic breakup on a shoot on a boat in the Pacific, really the better. Johnny still can't look at a jet ski the same way, and it's so fucking sad. My mother doesn't know, says Daniel, almost to himself. He shifts on his stool. It's not a competition, man. I know that. And now he sounds annoyed, which is reassuring. Johnny grins. Would you like to make it a competition? Gay chicken? You want to play gay chicken? Daniel scowls. Seeing as neither of us are actually gay or kids, no thanks. He pauses significantly, stacks a glass, and reaches for a new one. What would that even look like anyway? Glad you asked. Well, it would start maybe with me complimenting your eyes. Daniel raises a cool eyebrow. Well, don't let me stop you. And he should have started with something physical. He's not so good with words. I like them. Daniel nods and considers this, stacks his glass and reaches for a new one. He leans his elbow on the bar and says, Your smile makes me want to forget I'm having a bad day. Johnny feels his face go red and prays his tan hides it in the crappy lighting of the bar. Okay, if you're just going to make fun of me. Hey. He looks at Daniel, who doesn't look away or blink. He does have nice eyes, is a thing. We playing gay chicken or what? He demands. Johnny's brow knits. I thought we weren't. Right. But theoretically, if we were, what would be your next move? Right. Okay. Theoretical gay chicken with Daniel. What could go wrong? I guess I'd push the envelope a little. I'd maybe stand. And he does. And sort of lean forward over the bar. And he does. And his heart has started to realize what he's doing and is picking up speed. But that's what happens in any game of chicken. Move over, Cuban Missile Crisis. Except this game of chicken is one he's playing with himself more than Daniel. Because he hasn't allowed himself to even think about this in forever. But after the other night, he can't think about anything else and make it really, really obvious that I'm thinking of kissing you. And he does. Dropping his eyes to watch Daniel's mouth, the way he immediately licks his bottom lip. Daniel breathes out and shifts forward so both his forearms are on the bar. And if Johnny gets another kiss because the other guy can't stand losing, he's more than okay with that. Fuck playing it cool. Fuck protecting his heart. He'll take whatever he can get, and he'll take it now. Oh my God, can we get some service here? Says an asshole loudly from 5 feet away. And then, in something that's not quite an undertone, gays make the worst fucking bartenders. Johnny narrows his eyes and looks down the bar, But before he can open his mouth to make his reply, or plan his first punch, same difference, Daniel darts forward across the bar and plants a quick kiss on his cheek. "I win," he says, and then he walks down to serve the asshole while Johnny is left hovering, staring after him. It's an hour to bar close, and Johnny is bored out of his mind. He has his last beer bottle on its side on the bar in front of him, and he's spinning it over and over to see if he can make it land pointing on Daniel every time. "Hey, I'll have another," he says when Daniel gets close enough to hear him. "Nope." Johnny looks up from the spinning bottle. "What? Why not?" "You've had enough," is the baffling answer. He leans forward to give them a semblance of privacy and says in an undertone, "Hey, you know I don't have any trouble getting it up after." Daniel heaves a sigh. "Not the point. You drink too much," he waves. "Like, in general." And it's all the more confusing because he barely looks at Johnny as he says it. He's filling 3 pint glasses of draft and scoping out the bar for people waiting. He's distracted, which means he isn't thinking, which means this is something he's thought before. "Since when do you care?" he says, annoyed because, Jesus, it's a bar. What else is he supposed to do here? Read one of Michelle's shitty weird books? Daniel's expression flinches a little, but his voice sounds more or less normal, that is, bitchy, when he says, "You've had what, 6? That's enough for one night. I'm cutting you off." And then, before Johnny can voice another protest, he adds, "I'll make it up to you." And Johnny is so confused. "So, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?" Daniel asks him as they drive back to his apartment after bar close. Johnny blinks ahead at the dark street. Despite the fact it was so busy that night, and that the bar was going to be closed tomorrow, he has managed to forget the reason for it all. "Oh, the chef usually cooks a big meal, and Sid has people over." "People," says Daniel. "What, like a networking thing?" And at Johnny's nod, "What a tool." "Yeah." Usually his mom sneaks away halfway through and they go get shakes and burgers someplace. But tomorrow doesn't care it's Thanksgiving. It only knows it's a Thursday, which means Johnny's standing around completely useless as Laura is miserable and sick. He glances over. "How about you? Big day off for you." The only reason the bar is closed is because it's a college bar. Every other drinking establishment will have their doors open to refugees. Johnny is already flicking through his mental Rolodex in preparation. "Still have a half day at the garage," says Daniel. "But yeah, me and my ma are going over to Mr. Miyagi's. Between the 3 of us, we should be able to cook up a good meal." He taps a finger on the steering wheel and says abruptly, "Ever feel weird to you? Like, it seems everyone else has such a big family. I've got an uncle and a cousin out in Jersey, and that's it. Zip." "I don't think I have any cousins. Maybe on my dad's side, but that doesn't really count. Except for the possibility of accidental cousin smooching. Dutch had joked about it once in high school, and Johnny had avoided blondes for like 6 months. Wherever his deadbeat dad and potential deadbeat siblings were, he'd hoped it was far from the valley. But I don't know. I'm pretty used to it, just being my mom and me. Don't really think about it anymore." He used to think about it all the time, back when he watched a lot of TV. Seemed like every family on TV was big, and eventually his brain had it sorted. Real families were a kid and his mom, and TV families were big and loud and somehow didn't kill each other by the end of the episode. "Right," says Daniel, nodding at the road. "Right." So it's not just his imagination, he's pretty sure, that Daniel is being super weird. "Want to go see Rocky V tomorrow night?"
asks Daniel in that same jumpy, aggressive tone he's been using off and on all night. Tone like a challenge to a fight. Content that sounds a lot like a date. Like he's pushing and pulling Johnny at the same time. Sure, he says. Daniel nods like they've made some kind of binding compact. Okay then. Maybe he can sneak some drinks into the theater. Johnny's become strangely fond of Daniel's tiny, crappy apartment, with its water stains on the ceiling and persisting lack of a television. After getting in, he goes to check on Roxanne, because he's never entirely sure Daniel won't have killed her while he was away. But there she is, poking around her plant. When he glances up again, Daniel is standing there, just watching him. Johnny's stomach tightens a little. Is everything... says Johnny. I mean, are you... Fine, says Daniel shortly, rubbing his palms on his jeans. He takes a half step forward, and his expression turns frustrated. Just, would you... He turns to him. Oh, well... Just hang on a second. And then he turns away again and toes off his shoes. He locks the door. He looks around the room like he's forgotten something. Okay, he says again, and then he turns his back to Johnny, takes two steps, and rises up to cup the back of his head and kiss him. After a moment, Johnny reaches up and gets a light grip on the wrist around his neck. He doesn't do anything but cradle it, like it's a grounding wire. Daniel presses in, and he brings his free arm around his waist, and even though he's the one holding on, Johnny thinks, please don't let go. The end of part 4.